The exceptionally American problem of rising roadway deaths, according to the New York Times. This published just yesterday. It's a story about how, while during the pandemic and at other times, the number of car deaths went down during the pandemic, ours went up. We saw an increase of 5%. And we said, well, that's because there were fewer cars. Therefore, you could go faster. And therefore, people went crazy. But it wasn't like that everywhere else. In Finland, they were down 3%, Lithuania down 4%, Australia down 7%, Mexico down 9%, Austria down 17%, Japan down 18%. In America, car deaths during the pandemic up 5%. And we saw a tragic crash on Michigan Avenue just recently featuring that damn Dodge Charger. Let's talk a little bit about this story with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Welcome back to the show, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I was going to look it up. I've done this before, and I was disappointed. I thought if I did search car most involved in crashes, I would see the Dodge Charger way up there, or most stolen. But it's a Honda Accord and a Toyota Camry, you know, mundane cars that are very reliable and people steal to either use or for parts, right?
Yeah, there's two things that people steal cars for these days. One is for joyrides and the other is for parts. And the very pragmatic parts people tend to steal things like Accords and Camrys and Silverados and F-150s because there's so much market for those parts used. There's so much parts commonality. Joyriders love the Chargers. They love the Challengers. Those are both Dodge products, especially ones powered by a Hemi or supercharged Hemi engines.
Boy, if you had one of those, you'd think, I've got to park this in a garage. Or,
yeah.
Seriously, though, I mean, it just seems to me like not only are those cars stolen a lot, but they're driven so recklessly, either by the original owner or the kid that stole it, that it's not a smart purchase. I'm sure you will persuade me otherwise.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense that if you're going to buy something like this that is an easy target, that people want so badly and certainly want to drive, you should have a garage at the very least, and perhaps live someplace suburban where garageability is a little easier.
And this, listen, you're not a bad person if you want a super slick car that goes really fast with a powerful engine. There's nothing wrong with that. But here's what's bugging me, and it's not Dodge, it's every manufacturer of cars. I want them to get more invested in the anti-theft technology.
Well, one of the things that's happening, talking about that technology, and we saw that Hyundai Kia got itself in a little trouble for not using the immobilizer, but most other manufacturers do use the immobilizer, and that's why most of the thefts now are carjacking thefts, because you need the key to operate the vehicle. We've gotten past the Rockford Files days where you can get into a car and cross two wires and start that vehicle, unless it's a Hyundai or Kia, making the key essential, almost essential to the theft.
So, I'm sorry, if you're telling me that you can't hotwire a modern car, essentially, that you have to have the fob or whatever it is that starts that car?
Yeah, the fob contains a code. Usually it's a passive diode, so the car itself sends out a signal, looks for that code. If it doesn't find it when you try to start the car, it won't start the car. And there isn't anything really that someone stealing a car can do about that in a reasonable amount of time. It's just, you just pass on that vehicle because you're not going to be able to steal it.
So I was thinking something like two-factor authentication, you know, the same way that I can protect my phone.
Wow.
Why don't they, when they get in there, then have to, so you stole my fob, or I left the car, well, if you leave it running, you leave it running. But it would just seem to me like the same technology we're using for our devices we could use for our cars. I would remember my code, but the punk that jumps into my car wouldn't.
There is actually systems available. There are systems available now. Lincoln is one of the manufacturers that offers this, where your key can be placed on your phone, so you don't need to carry the key. And then I'm trying to remember if there is a two-factor component to that, but there might be.
Another idea I had, Tom, I'm just spitballing here, but it just seems to me like this is such a rudimentary thing. Make car not go. There ought to be a thing where the wheels won't turn, so even if you can start the engine up, the wheels have locked, and it's inoperable. How about that great idea?
Oh, that that's not a bad idea. The immobilizer basically does the same thing, and I'm trying to think how that would work, John. So,
I don't ask me. Like, I don't know. Like, do I need a button that I push when you steal my car that now you're half a block away and now the blocks lock up? I don't know, but it just seems to me like it's too easy to steal cars. But go back to a point you made a minute ago, that in fact most of the car thefts now aren't the traditional means I'm thinking of. If somebody's got my key or they've hotwired it, they are stealing a car from me as I'm driving it, essentially, right? They're carjacking it.
Yeah, that's what happened. On the Consumer Guide Car Stuff podcast, episode 96, we talked with Sergeant Thomas Mason of the Chicago Police Department about this. And thefts have overwhelmingly moved to carjackings because you need the key to do that. And this has inherently made those thefts more violent, obviously, because the victim is involved directly and as often needs to be moved out of the way as in, you know, best-case scenario and sometimes harmed in worst-case scenario. So that is the problem with cars having become more difficult to steal. And overwhelmingly, too, in Chicago, the cars that are stolen for joyrides, which is frustrating. You'd think they'd be just a little bit more industrious than that.
Well, okay, then here again, what do I know about car technology? But say you've carjacked my vehicle. Again, on my phone, is this what the immobilizer does? Can I hit a button that will shortly thereafter render the vehicle inoperable? Do I have some technology like that?
Not from the phone, but a lot of cars now are equipped with something called over-the-air updates, and that is a direct line from the manufacturer via cellular service, and it works a lot like, I'm trying to remember that old service, but General Motors OnStar will do this too, where it'll immobilize the car on the road, making it undrivable, and generally the perpetrators would have to get out of the car and just abandon it.
Yeah. You got another minute for me, Tom? I've got some car questions for you. Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Consumer Guide Automotive. You may have a question, too, or a comment or an observation. 815 texted in, seriously, the car companies need to be more involved in preventing car theft. Tom Appel's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. We're talking about car theft and what can be done to make it more difficult for the bad guys to steal our cars. John, ask your guest about installing a kill switch that can be turned on when you leave the car. You've mentioned that, Tom. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, you can buy something called a kill switch if you wanted to. It can be a very simple thing where you can simply cut off power to the vehicle. Very effective. If someone can't find the switch you've installed, your car is completely safe from theft. You have to remember you have it, and you have to remember that if something goes wrong with it, you have to remember that you have it because it could confuse a mechanic for a while.
Also, you know, the big theft thing for us in Chicago and other cities isn't necessarily stealing the car, but stealing the catalytic converter. Is anything else being done about that these days?
The best thing I've seen for that, some people want you to paint it a certain color, which indicates that it was stolen, and that makes some sense. There's also sort of a cage that you can install, and this involves you installing it or having it installed, which is not free. But it's basically a wire cage that goes around the exhaust pipe, which makes it difficult to cut through. And I think that that's most effective because if a potential thief sees that, they're going to be like, eh, too much trouble, and they're going to move on to a different vehicle.
Hey, John Williams, all of your ideas involve you not being in the car, hence carjacking. How about registered thumbprint must be on the wheel or it shuts down in 30 seconds? Okay, how about that one, Tom?
Probably coming. We're already seeing things like facial recognition on the outside of a car. A certain number of Genesis products, that's Hyundai's luxury arm, the GV60, for example, which is a compact electric vehicle, has a facial recognition panel on the outside of the vehicle. Very effective. So if you want to use that, we're going to see things like thumbprints because we see them on iPhones, so that technology has certainly gotten affordable.
Yeah, I guess that's a good idea, right? You know, here's one of my brilliant ideas. Thanks for asking, Tom. It would be everybody's thumb has a chip in it, and then you just press. So now it's got your bank codes, your credit card number, you know, your kid's account at school to get his loan, just all that crap. It's encoded on a chip in your thumb. And whenever you need a new thing, they just, boop, encode it. And then when you ever need it, beep, you hold it up to a thing and the problem is solved. How about that, Tom?
The problem is that a dealer would charge you $175 to program your phone to work with your thumb to work with the car. Other than that, it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, I have a BMW i3 with a keyless fob. The car won't work if the fob isn't with me in the driver's seat. Well, that's the case for most new cars now, isn't it, Tom?
It is, yeah. The fob has to be someplace close. And people may realize, too, that I've made this mistake a number of times where the key is in my backpack and I put that in the back seat. That's too far away.
Oh, really?
So it needs to be, yeah, it needs to be relatively close.
Here's the mistake I made with that. I don't have that fancy a vehicle, but I pulled up to the valet. The car's running. The valet gets in it. He drives off to park my car. I have the fob in my pocket. The car will operate as long as it wants to, but once you stop, it can't start up again. So when then we came back out after the meal, I said, where's my car? And they go, well, it's over there, but we can't get it now because we don't have the fob. Is that a scenario you're familiar with?
Yeah, and that was actually one of the arguments against keyless entry back in the day. There was also the airport scenario where you would drop your wife off at the airport and she'd have your key, and you wouldn't realize until you tried to get back into your car after you got home that she's got the key, which is why it's nice to have a second key someplace handy.
Last we spoke to you, there was also the study that said that cars should have a governor on them to limit how fast they can go. You may recall that. Is there anything new on that front?
No, but there are some manufacturers that have apps and whatnot that allow you to regulate or limit where a car can travel or how fast it can go when perhaps your children are using it, for example.
Ah.
In terms of a broader nanny state system, that no advancement on that where it would actually regulate all owners, no.
That would totally be a nanny state thing. I don't love it, but I'm just looking for technological solutions. Dave,
sure.
Dave, you're on WGN with Tom Appel. What can we do for you, Dave?
Yeah, two things here, okay. The thing with the thumbprint?
Yeah.
Or the chip in your thumb?
Yeah.
These guys watching on TV where these guys lopped off the thumb and take it with them.
Yeah, they chop off my thumb and now they've got everything they need, right?
Yeah, they say, give me your cards and your thumb. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to have the chip put on my spleen.
That's harder to get at, yeah.
I mean, nobody even knows where that
and,
is.
And the other...
What else you got for us there, he left us. Are we taking that call on line two, or we'll just keep moving along here? Last thing then, car manufacturers during the holidays tend to push Mercedes always has a clever campaign, et cetera, et cetera. Is this a busy car purchasing season really, Tom?
No, it's a slow season. Winter is bad for car sales. People get distracted. They do other things. They worry about how much money they're spending at Christmas. So the real slow period, really, December, January, February, things start to pick up in March, and then summer is very strong. So this is a great time to advertise and remind people that there are cars out there that they can buy.
I'm hearing that the lots are getting more vehicles. Are you seeing that as well?
Yeah, we now have about 1.6 million in inventory. That's 1,600,000 cars in inventory right now, which is getting closer to normal for this time of year. It had been as low a few months ago as 800,000 vehicles. There was literally nothing to choose from. So the situation is improving. It's still tight, and it's going to be a hard time to find the exact color and feature combination you're looking for, but it's not impossible anymore.
I was at an event not that long ago talking to a Ford dealer in the Chicago area, and he had 10 new vehicles on his lot. You know, he would normally have 300. He had 10 new vehicles. I haven't talked to him in a while. I presume those numbers are higher.
They're getting better, and you have manufacturers that are having a harder time than others. It's very hard to find a Toyota right now, for example. So you may want to call around before you drive to a lot.
You might want to click around if you want to know more about the auto industry. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your thoughts.
Oh, thanks for having me.